Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. Case Watch deals with content meant for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Case Watch.
The body found in Grand Teton National Park is Gabby Petito, and she was killed.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
Late today, Chris Watts was officially charged with the murders of his wife and his two young girls.
Remember these words. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
So I creep, yeah, just creeping on the down low. It's your fellow masshole creep here, Brit. Transplant from Massachusetts, currently in Virginia, and you're watching Case Watch.
How's it going, everybody? I'm Mark.
And I'm Charity.
And this is a little bit of a different Case Watch episode that you guys are probably used to. You may have remembered a while ago that we feel very strongly about domestic violence and what can and will go wrong, unfortunately. And this will be episode number one that we're doing in the domestic violence. So we have a special guest. Her name is Carrie Ann Connedy, and she's on here to talk to us about a very important case. Let's all give her a warm welcome. Carrie Ann, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you so much.
A, I know this is very stressful for you, so take your time and the floor is yours. What would you like to speak with us today about?
Thank you so much, Mark and Charity, for having me. Let me just start out by first sharing that I learned about you and your podcast initially through Facebook, and it caught my attention because you were speaking about Gabby Petito's case. And in the experience and tragedy of that with Gabby, it brought back a lot of memories for me because I lost my sister Kira to domestic violence, homicide in 2013. Her husband, Jeff Trevino, killed her. And I remember when the news first came out about Gabby and that she was missing. There wasn't even all the details. This was just right in the beginning of the case, really the forefront of everything. And when it came on the news, I just had this feeling, this gut feeling in the pit of my stomach. And I said to my husband, he killed her.
Ugh.
And I don't know how to explain it, but I just felt such a compelling feeling. I have experienced myself and so similarly, the feelings just automatically came back to me of what I felt when everything that happened with Kira. And I had reached out to you. I'd made a comment on your page. And I'm just so happy to be here. It is not frequently at all that I've really had an opportunity to talk about this, to talk about everything that happened to Kira, how I navigated through it. And it is something that is haunting, haunts me every day. You know, we celebrate the lives of people that we lose, but when we lose them so tragically, it is, you know, really an uprooting of your life, and then you have to learn how to live again in a different way without that person, and it is so hard. on February 21st of 2013, Jeffrey Trevino killed my sister, Kira Steger. She was 30 years old. Kira and I were only 14 months apart, or as I say, close in age. And I'm going to tell you about how I learned about Kira
being
missing, okay? I'm going to start there, because obviously that's when this tragedy, this experience began. Really, it's just actually a big nightmare. But on February 24th, which was a Sunday, I was working at a clinic, a healthcare clinic. I was managing a retail health clinic at the time. And I had an occasional provider coming in that didn't know the computer system. So I had gone in on a Sunday, which was not normal, but I would do it when I needed to. And as I was in the office, I received a text message from a friend of mine that I went to high school with, who was also friends with Kira. And it said, I heard your sister's missing, which seems like a very odd way to learn that your sister is missing by someone, not a family member, but someone that is a mutual friend sending you a message. And immediately I had no idea what she was talking about. And she referenced a missing person's photo, or notice rather, that was on Facebook. Now, you know, I mean, 2013, I wasn't really a heavy user of Facebook. We all used social media back then so differently.
Yes.
But I did go on social media, on Facebook. And sure enough, there was a picture, a missing person's picture with Kira's name, the car that she had, contact information, etc. And immediately I was like, what is going on?
And you and your sister were close.
Yeah. Yes.
I can't imagine finding out that way.
It was just terrible. It didn't even seem real. Let's just say that. It just seemed like, this can't be, right?
That happens to other people. Yeah.
I'm trying not to interrupt you, but it's just, I find it so hard that you found out from Facebook and not from a family member or her, at that point, her husband.
Right, which is what I said. So immediately when this all happened very quickly on the Sunday morning, the 24th of February. It all happened so quickly. So obviously that didn't make sense to me. I called our mom and I was like, what's going on? I'm hearing that there's our mother, Marcy, she was like, yeah, Jeff called me this morning. The first thing he said to me, Carrie Ann, was he asked me if I was sitting down. I mean, which is just a very peculiar thing to introduce a phone call, like, to the mother of someone who's missing. Like, you would think that it would sound something like, Marcy, is Kira with you? Is Kira there? Like, she's been missing. I'm freaking out.
What's in my head as well.
Me too. Like, that is very odd.
So when someone you love so much were to really to go missing, would you not want to stand on the highest mountain and scream at the top of your lungs for someone, for everyone to help you?
Absolutely.
Right? Yep.
And it wasn't that way. It wasn't that way. Jeff had told Marcy that Kira had been missing since the morning of the 22nd. So 22nd, 23rd, 24th.
And now you found out.
That's odd. I found out.
That's really odd.
So what was interesting is Jeff made a missing persons call to the police department. He had put the missing persons report under her maiden name.
Oh, wow.
So this was intentional, and I'm going to tell you about what happened. So I talked with Marcy and our mom. Talked with Marcy, and I said, this does not make any sense. Like, Kira's been missing. He hasn't called us. What he said was odd. And I am no homicide investigator or forensic type of analyzer whatsoever. But what I do know is I know people well. This was an extremely terrible feeling that I had. And I got done talking with Marcy, and I had Jeff's number. I just called him. I called him at the clinic. I put everything aside. And I had about, so I called him, okay? And I said, I was surprised that he answered my phone call so quickly. I mean, he answered it very quickly. But,
I wonder if
you know,
he expected
at least he answered. Could have been. So it's insane the way things happened from that point on, because it was like I was, in fact, like, I knew something was wrong. I had a terrible feeling. And it was almost like I stepped into an investigator type of analysis in my conversation with him. Like I said, Jeff, I want to know what happened from Thursday, February 21st to right now. And I just let him talk. And I had about 20 post-its in front of me. I just kept taking them and writing. And what I heard was, well, she's been drinking a lot. She's been out. She's been hanging out with her friends too much. She comes home late. She, you know, she's not herself. It was all of this blaming.
A lot of victim blaming.
That,
yeah.
And whenever there's too much information right up front like that, that's when I would get suspicious of that. Like, why is he all of a sudden offering all this up? It's
right.
Weird.
And I'm like, again, in my head, I'm thinking how I felt, right? Because I love her. And I just could not connect with him at all. And I said, Jeff, this does not sound like my sister. And he said, you know what, Carrie Ann? I loved Kira. I thought I knew her.
Wait a minute.
He said
love.
Past tense.
Exactly. And I said, I won't say the F word on here, but I said, why the F are you speaking about my sister in the past tense?
Oh my gosh.
And let me tell you.
Did your heart drop? It must have dropped.
Yes, but I knew. I knew then that it was really bad. And in my initial thought was he had her in the basement. So I said, Why did you speak about my sister in the past tense? And he lost it. He was yelling at me. He was swearing at me. He tried to correct what he had said.
Of course.
And I said, I know what you said. I got off that phone call. I looked at the Facebook missing persons report. And I called the number. I called the number that he set up for a missing persons report. I called the number. And they answered, and I said, I'm Carrie Ann. I'm Kira Stager, Kira Trevino's sister. There's a missing persons report for her. She's been missing. Her husband called in a missing persons report. And they said, we don't have a missing persons report for Kira Trevino.
You're kidding.
No. And I said, yes, you do. And they're like, Carrie Ann, we don't. We do not have one. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, this is crazy. It just was so overwhelming and kept getting worse so quickly. You know, you know that in situations like this, time is so important. And when you want things to happen to, like, progress to where you can feel like you're helping someone that's in danger, the time is like, feels like a second is like an eternity. And I just was like, no, there is. It's almost like I was just like pleading, like begging them to help me. So then they asked me if there was another name that she would have been under. And so I said Kira Steger, and then they found her. So when he called in the missing persons report, he put it under her maiden name intentionally because the missing persons report on Facebook said Kira Trevino. And anyone that would have seen anything like me would have had difficulty getting through. But luckily, I added Steger, and I said, anyone that calls with Kira Trevino, Kira Steger, Kira K, you must take it. Like, so they added that on there. And then after I did that, because I knew that it was bad, I had called Kira's friend Lindsay, and I had asked her if she would travel that night, February 24th, which was a Sunday, to their home, to Kira and Jeff's home. First I called and asked for a welfare check on the home because I thought that he had her in the basement. Like, for some reason, some picture in my mind was so compelling that he had her downstairs in the basement. You know, your mind does so many crazy things. Not crazy. I guess it's not crazy. It's relative to the experience of a traumatic experience. It's actually really reasonable. But I just kept picturing her down in the basement, like in a wall.
Oh, that's a horrible, horrible thing to think of.
Yeah. But anyway, so I called the welfare check on the home. And then I was talking with Lindsay, Kira's friend, a mutual friend of mine and Kira's. But she was just teaching a dance class that night, and she couldn't go. Now, we could probably all agree that that wouldn't have been the safest place for me to be. I'm glad it didn't work out for me to go because I said, you know, you want to scream at the mountaintops. You just want to turn the world upside down to find her and help. And anyway, that didn't work out. So the next morning, we traveled, mine and Kira's dad, and my mom and my aunt flew up from Texas. We all went to, we traveled to the Mall of America because our car was found there. Her car was found parked in the Mall of America parking lot where she had worked. She worked there. She was a store manager and had worked at the Mall of America. And we had gotten to the mall and they let us know that Kira's car was reverse parked in a parking stall. And there was blood in the trunk of the vehicle.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
And when her car was found, her purse was there. She had divorce papers in her car. There was a trunk liner that was pulled out of the back of her Chevy Cobalt car that was tossed in the embankment behind the reversed parked car. There was an embankment, so he had taken the trunk liner out and threw it out.
And he just left it there?
He just left it there.
That wasn't very smart, obviously.
Now, you said that the car was parked, you know, reverse, backed in. Is that how she would normally park the car if she was driving?
No, and the investigators asked me that.
Okay, because that's something that stuck out to me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, and it was weird that her car was there. Kira had, and the previous few months prior to her death, There were a number of things that were happening to her car in the Mall of America parking lot. She would come out of work and she'd have a flat tire. She would come out of work, and one time she had a cut brake line.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But you see, this was all his making sure she didn't have money to leave him.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Things weren't going well. They were separated, but living in the same house. And it wasn't going well. 2 weeks prior to her death, Kira called our parents and asked them for money to get her own place because she didn't have a lot of extra money. And they both told her that they didn't have any money.
Ugh.
To give to her.
That's really, really sad.
Yeah. But it just was terrifying. So we were there, we were meeting with the detectives. I mean, I saw where her car was parked. We were there for a few days. It just was unbelievable. When they did the welfare check on Jeff, the police came to the door and he had a bunch of cleaning supplies behind him.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
So he had been cleaning. So February 21st, he had killed her. He then, I believe it was the next day, went and picked up his daughter. Jeff had a daughter who was in, I believe, middle school. And he picked her up from school, brought her home, made jambalaya, and was cleaning the house with her there.
Oh my God.
This is psychotic behavior.
Animal. I was just going to say, this is an animal. Mm-hmm. I don't want to jump ahead for you, but were the police actively, like, did they take him in?
Not at that time. They did get a search warrant and everything.
That's right. They'd have to go the steps.
Yeah. So the next few days, everything happened slowly, but so quickly. They got... I think obviously because when they did the welfare check and they saw, you know, that he had cleaning supplies and everything else. And again, his affect, his behavior just was off. It wasn't what we know or how we would react if one of our loved ones were missing. It just was so flat. And rehearsed. So, over the next few days, so they did get a search warrant. They searched the home. They luminoled the home. When they were luminoling the home, you know, and that's that stuff like on, you know, like the murder whatever shows, whatever, that shows blood with the black light. So they did that, and they found blood all over the home. I had seen some of the photos of
this. Oh, no.
And it's believed that he had killed Kira in their bedroom. What he did was... move all of the, after he cleaned everything up, cleaned the carpet, wiped things down, he moved his bed over what was the outline of Kira's torso in blood.
Oh my God.
My God.
Over that spot on the carpet. Now, to the naked eye, you wouldn't see that. Even with, right? Because he had cleaned it.
Oh, yeah.
But you could see, you know, like when you move your furniture.
Yeah, after you can kind of see those little divots in the carpet.
Yeah. So you could see where the furniture was. So if you move everything back to where the original imprints, you know, pressure points in the carpets were, then they lifted up the carpet and they found that.
Oh my God.
You know, with their, along with their other luminol. So as the police were luminoling the home, Jeff was at one of their, Kira and Jeff had a mutual, had a friend that lived down the street. So he was there. He sat there. And he kept saying things like, well, what if, you know, Kira's, sometimes Kira gets bloody noses.
Oh, what if they, God.
You know, like...
he was trying to make excuses because he knew what they were going to find there.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, now, it upsets me because if you look at a person who actually cares about somebody and they go missing, that's not what they're thinking of. They're thinking about what can I do to help my loved one.
Yep.
Yeah. And he sat there, talked about that, talked about, oh, what if she cut her legs shaving? Bloody noses. And then he took a nap.
Oh my God.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. No.
This guy's a scumbag. Just plain and simple.
Yes, he
is. This guy is a scumbag.
And a pretty not intelligent one.
And this is just, I'm just sharing, you know, the facts from the case. Yep. This is out there. These are not, you know, this is out there.
Yep.
This
and the reason why, when we first started talking, that I wanted to make sure we did this because there's multiple outcomes that can come out of domestic violence. And this mm-hmm. is the ultimate worst one, yes. But this is one that happens. And if we can do anything by getting out a little bit of a message or getting things out to people that hear this who don't have the strength to leave or don't understand what could happen, or you hear it a lot on TV and you hear it a lot from people like, he wouldn't do that to me, or that wouldn't happen here, or no, you know, he apologized, or this or that. This is what can happen. So if this gives anybody the strength to get help or leave, that's why we're doing this. Exactly. And that's why when you had sent that message to me, I was like, can we discuss this? And we have been. And I'm so happy that you're here because you can tell the story now. And I'm so thankful that you've come on.
Yeah, that too is my wish. Because this stuff sucks. It is terrible to live through. I mean, I don't have my sister here with me anymore, which is absolutely heartbreaking. But I do believe, and I have heard of situations that Kira's story has impacted people to leave an abusive relationship. And so the message is so important. It is. So I agree with you, Mark. It's not an easy story to tell, but it needs to be told. So, so they got the warrant. They luminoled the house. They ended up taking Jeff in, which for the first time just a couple of months ago from an ID channel production that was put together. I saw his interrogation, part of his interrogation.
So you weren't privy to any of this up until recently?
Oh, wow.
Not that piece. No, I did not see everything, you know? So that's another thing. I mean, years later, we just had Kira's 9th anniversary of her death, believe it or not, 9 years, February 21st. So there have been a couple of productions put out by the ID Channel, Investigative Discovery, that the second one here, the most current one, they had asked me if I wanted to be a part of, but the reality is, I feel it's just safer for me, healthiest for me and my family to, I just didn't, it's so difficult to talk about and live through, that. And when you see these productions and there are people that are acting as the person you knew.
Yeah.
And loved, it's really difficult to watch that. And so I just, it's just better for me if I continue working on advocacy and education than stressing myself out, you know, to being a part of that. I think that there's probably, you know, some really good, very congruent purposes, you know, for making that production. I just, it's just not for me personally to participate in, that's all.
And I understand that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But anyhow, so after obviously they had done the warrant and the luminol, they had taken Jeff in. He was arrested. And I can't remember what they held him on initially. Because obviously we didn't have Kira. She was missing for a number of months. So she was killed on February 21st. We did not find her until May 8th.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
So I had spent many weekends back and forth. And might I add here that for some, to make matters worse, the winter that we had in Wisconsin and Minnesota that year were absolutely terrible. So we had orchestrated all of these searches, and what was so phenomenal was the number of people whom I've never met showed up. Hundreds of them.
Yeah, people rally. There's good people out there.
Such good people.
Yep.
And if any of them are listening to this today, thank you so much. Because it was so cold. And there was so much snow. And you realize at that point in time when you're having to put yourself in a position where you realize that you're searching for someone who is not alive anymore. We were told that. We were told that based on the amount of blood in the home, that Kira would not be found alive.
That's horrible.
That is so horrible.
And we were led to the first search I ever was a part of was at Keller Lake, which was not even 5 miles away from their home. And I was on my way to Minnesota and I got a call that something had been found at Keller Lake. And my granddad and my uncle had flown up from Louisiana just for this particular search, to just start searching. And there's so many unexplainable things that have happened through the process of what happened with Kira, how we found things, how we were led to certain places, that are just truly what I think are like just an act of, God.
Someone was leading the way.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think my sister was too. So my granddad had actually, at Keller Lake, my granddad was, doing a search, and he was like in a embankment on the side of the road. And he found something, and it was like a Walmart bag, you know, like a little plastic Walmart bag, kind of tied, right?
Yep.
So he picks it up. Now, they're very particular, obviously, when you're doing a search like this. Don't touch anything that, you know, but, you know, being that it's a Walmart bag, you don't necessarily think immediately anything about it. So he used his stick that he was holding, and he put it on. He scooped the hand part of the bag and brought it to the side of the road. And he started opening it up, but he couldn't quite see well. So he took his stick, picked it back up, took the bag to the other side of the road where the sunlight was shining, and set it down and opened it up. And he thought what was in the bag, he thought was dried up intestines.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow.
It wasn't. It was a pillow, a bloody pillowcase, sports bra, a loofah sponge, and it was just dried blood.
Wow.
So then the BCA came, which is the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. They came and they brought their, it was almost like a mobile home. It looked like a mobile home. It was like a big mobile unit. And they had tested it for human blood, and it came back positive. So we got very direct instructions from there on out from the BCA and moving forward with the search there, because obviously that was, a compelling piece of evidence that very well led us to believe that that we could, as a collective unit group, find something else or her.
Oh, yeah.
So we, you know, we got together and we coordinated, you know, this group to go east, this group to go west, north, south. Like, we just needed to cover coverage of the whole area. So as we progressed in this search at Keller Lake, one of the groups got to a section of the lake where... off of the off of the edge of the lake onto the ice, about a few I don't know the exact number, but a few feet out, there was a hole in the ice, but it wasn't like an ice auger hole, you know. Yeah. It was very suspicious, the shape of it, the size of it. And what happened from that point was the investigator unit, police unit that was covering the case, ended up bringing in a cadaver dog to that site. And when a cadaver dog, at least to the best of my knowledge, when they detect a deceased person, they react by sitting. And the dog sat.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
And, well, you know, there's a really important piece I left out here. I want to tell you what led us to Keller Lake. It was a tip. It was a tip on the tip line that led us to Keller Lake. And the tip was, a woman was bartending, working at like a bartending restaurant kind of thing, and she was on her way home. So it was late, it was after bar close, and she was driving past on the road overlooking the lake. And she said that she had seen what looked like two people carrying a rolled up carpet over the lake.
Two people.
Two, okay. Two.
That's interesting.
Very. That's where the first tip that led us to Keller Lake came in. So that's why we were there, was because of her tip. Now, when I got there, after my granddad had found these, you know, articles of evidence, or I don't know, I don't like calling them what they really are. So there you have it, articles of evidence. When I got there, the woman that made the tip was there. And she one of Kira and my friends, Nikki, it was me and Nikki, Nikki's husband, Justin, and we were just standing there and we were talking to her. And the woman was asking, like, where did Kira live, like, from here? And I was explaining that it was just, you know, a couple of miles away. She said, oh, you know, I grew up over here. And I was like, oh, wow, you know, this is like so obviously so close to home in its literal meaning. And she's like, well, what street did she live on? And, you know, I told her, and she's like, oh, my gosh, that's the street I grew up on. Right. And I'm like, well, that's something. And she's like, well, what's the house number? And at the time I told her what it was, and it turns out that that's the house that Kira
got killed in.
The house that she grew up in, the woman that called the tip in. And I know this is absolutely like,
I have the chills right now.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
To this day, probably once or twice a year, I call Nikki, my friend Nikki. And I'm like, Nikki, that really happened, right? Like that, because it's so, your mind, like.
So much of a coincidence.
It's so much of a, like, yeah. It's so much of a coincidence. And when your mind and traumas, all these things are happening, you're like, okay, but did I get that right? Like, is that, and I just, to this day, it just absolutely boggles me.
That is some sort of divine intervention right there.
Definitely, that was
unbelievable.
Wow. And it was just like, wait a minute, what? No, like, I just. I don't even know. It just brings me to being speechless to every time I think about it. So the woman that called in the tip, she helped search for a while, and it just was something else. But we had searched weekend after weekend. The cadaver dogs, they ended up flying in cadaver dogs from all over the United States, many of them. And we, as a group, everyone were bringing their ice augers, like, to Keller Lake, because we genuinely thought that he put her in there. That he put her, you know, so, I mean, we had divers. The lake was so shallow. It was a very shallow lake. So when you can take into consideration, you know, the inches of ice that they are under to how the depth of the actual lake itself, there was not much space for them to dive around. I mean, it was, they ended up taking turns and whatnot, but we didn't find her there. But when we were done searching at that lake, there were hundreds and hundreds of ice auger holes that all of the community came together to, so that we'd have different points of like contact throughout the ice for the dogs to check out, you know. It really is like, you realize in a situation like this just how big the world really is. Like, when you're really looking for a needle in a haystack, really looking, that's what it feels like. Like, you're just this one little person trying to find your sister with all of these unknown everything, really. All of the unknown. It is terrifying. And Jeff was not helping us.
Oh, that was my next question.
Yes, yeah, so upsetting.
He was probably tight-lipped as anything, right?
Yeah. Nothing.
No remorse, nothing. I mean, nothing. How can you just let family members be in such pain like that when you know where she was?
That's what bothers me probably the most out of all of these kind of situations is how he's the one who actually holds the keys to all of this, and he's just living life fine and just watching people who I'm assuming maybe at one point he supposedly cared about go through a pain that cannot be described to anybody and just not care. I find that just absolutely amazing.
Me too.
It was very cold. Jeff had always been to me a little bit different. We would be out to dinner as a family and taking a picture, of everyone at the dinner table, but he would never smile.
Huh.
And finally, I just asked, because that's how I roll. I'm like, Jeff, why don't you ever smile in these pictures? Like, you're not smiling in any of these photos. And he told me, he said, I only smile when I laugh.
That's odd.
And I was like, that's freaking weird. And I walked out of, dinner like, why? What is she doing? They had met at a bar. Actually, Kira was bartending at the time, and Jeff was in town because he was a drywaller, which is another reason why I thought she was in the basement wall of her home.
Oh, because he would know how to do that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And they had met when he was in town, and ultimately, Kira was living with me at the time when she came home from college for a year. I let her live with me, and they started dating, and she went to Minnesota and started working there, and they moved in together and, later got married. And then I didn't see her as much anymore. He certainly, kept her to himself.
Yeah, we've heard this a lot.
Yeah, this kind of follows the same MO you hear a lot.
Yeah.
Yep. How long were they together in total? How many years do you think?
I don't remember exactly. They got married in 2008, I believe.
Okay.
I haven't even thought about that for so long that I don't. But
I don't blame you for never wanting to think of him again.
I know. I don't blame you at all.
Yeah. Well, I get to think about when he gets out of prison on June 26th of 2031. He'll be 6 years old, but we'll get there in a minute.
Oh, my God. Wait, you said gets out.
I think we all need to show up at that hearing.
Yeah.
That is horrendous.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's no reason he should be
alone. Not only we as a family have to live this trauma.
Yep.
We've lost Kira. We have to live this trauma. And now we have to be afraid of his getting out of prison. And I calculate how old will my children be?
Oh, I bet.
I will never forget how mad he was with me on the phone. And I had to stand in front of a judge and testify about that. And he did not like it. And wow. I live in fear.
As you should.
Yeah.
It is. It's a terrible feeling to not ever be free of that kind of fear. So we had searched and searched, and there was a period where, because of the charges that we were going to make against Jeff and the timing of everything of still not yet having found Kira, her body, there was a point where, because of like something with like double jeopardy law and this and that, like we almost had to let him go, like let him out.
Oh my God.
Of jail. And I just remember praying so much about it. And then Kira, we found her, and then we found her on May 8th. And it was made, we had days to spare, like a few days to spare before we would have had to let him out.
Oh.
It came that close.
That's scary.
It really was. Everything was.
Even with all everything the blood in was. The house, though, like they couldn't hold him on that.
Well, they could hold him on it, but I get what she's saying. Whereas they, without a body, it makes it very hard.
I know, I bet.
Could you expand a little bit on the discovery of your sister?
Yeah. So on May 8th, she was found in the Mississippi River. She was found by a barge worker downtown Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minneapolis. And when she was found, I actually was at work that day and I had gotten a call that they found a body in the water, believed to be a female that had blonde hair.
Oh, wow.
And it in fact was her. And through all that time, she really didn't travel far. Like from, she was actually caught on the barge. They identified her by her dental records. And they went into, you know, I mean, I later learned about her injuries and how they believed Kira died. We learned about that through the medical examiner. And ultimately, they believed that she had, she had a deep laceration above her left eye, like very, very deep. She, the inside of her mouth, you know, was damaged. She had a broken finger, not at a joint part, like in the middle.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Like maybe she was like, had her finger out at him, like they gotten in an argument. she had, ultimately there was like damage to her liver, like some things. She was found with duct tape.
Oh my God.
Around her in the water. And they believe what happened is that the night of February 21st, and how everything, especially with the video surveillance and everything matching up, that's how they put this timeline together. He picked up Kira from work. They went to Crave, and what he was trying to do was create this date night.
Creating a whole alibi story for himself. This is obviously like, something that he's premeditated.
We were a happy couple. We went on date night.
Yeah, we went on date night, but he knew that she was thinking about not wanting to be in the marriage anymore. So he was trying to, like, win her back or something. Like, I'm going to try and take her to dinner. There were some text messages that he had had with a buddy. But what's odd is, you know, I would say it would be reasonable for most people to, like, go on a date night, like, have dinner, go home, watch a movie. But no. So for him, there were all of these things he planned in one night. Like, you would never really do all of these in one night, or at least I certainly wouldn't, but they went to dinner. There was a movie, something about, I think there was like a bowling thing or something. Like, it just was.
Yikes, that's a lot of activity.
You're talking like a week's worth of stuff for me. That's ridiculous.
It sounds like he wanted to be seen a lot of places with her.
Bingo.
Having quote unquote fun.
I think that's what it is. Yep. Bingo.
So they rented a movie and they got home and watched this movie, and Kira had been texting. She had actually been texting her general manager at the time, which was a male that she had been talking to. Now, Kira and Jeff, yes, they were married. They were separated in their own house. But anyway, And I think that we think that Jeff just got so upset and just snapped. But he ultimately, you know, they went into her injuries and detailed her injuries. And ultimately, you know, he smothered her with the pillow.
Ugh.
But she fought. She fought him. His picture has scratches on his body. And she, I know that she fought really hard.
This is horrible.
It is horrible. She is just the most beautiful person. And it's really difficult to have her not here for so many things. And I had wondered, you know, and continue to wonder for so many years now, you know, you think, did she hurt for a long time? What was she? What happened? You know, I think, you know, like, how does evil win that?
The sad thing I kind of want to say is with a lot of these cases that I've read up on, it sounds similar, whereas Mark stated earlier, some of these abuse survivors or not survivors, unfortunately, they're embarrassed. They might feel it's their fault. So they don't tell their family members. They don't tell their loved ones. They don't reach out to anybody. And unfortunately, situations like this can occur.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish she would have called me, because although I was, you know, I just had two babies at the time. I didn't have a lot of extra money, but I would have. Which, you know what? When I would have helped her, but that's not even a guarantee that this still wouldn't have happened.
Right. That's true.
Unfortunately, you're right there. Yeah.
Sometimes it still happens.
You may have actually not only not prevented this, you may have put yourself in danger as well.
That's I was just, and your children. I was thinking that as well. Yeah.
It's a horrible situation. And this, I don't even want to, I can't even call him a gentleman. This scumbag, he's already proven that he would take the life of somebody he supposedly loved. And last I knew, when you know, you're in a marriage, you're supposed to love, honor, and respect that person. You're
supposed to.
And it's just absolutely unacceptable. And I honestly think that maybe even if you had gotten her away, you would have put yourself and children in danger as well.
Yeah, someone that violent like that would go to all different lengths to keep his person close to him.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nope.
Which, you know, I know who he is. That's why it's so much on my, heart, and it's so much just, I guess, on my being of the future, you know? So he was sentenced to, he didn't get first degree intentional homicide, which I was a little bit surprised, because there were premeditated actions.
Oh my gosh, going on
he
the
set
date?
Up the yeah. whole night as a cover almost.
And before, a few weeks before he killed Kira, he went, this is absolutely madness, but just like everything else, it's true. So he went to Marcy's house, our Mother Marcy's house, and borrowed her carpet cleaner.
Because
because they were going to be moving out of that home in April. Now, April, okay, February, April.
Yeah, you're not going to clean up then.
He used my mother's carpet cleaner to clean up after.
Oh my gosh.
I am just.
I don't have any words for that.
I don't either.
He has a scumbag.
Well, he's a lot more than that, but.
Yes.
So he was sentenced to 27 and a half years.
How?
In prison.
How does this happen?
This is unacceptable.
Well, and get this. So the defense was originally asking. So he got second degree unintentional murder with three accounts of aggravating factors, which was also considered by the judge, which then allowed for what's called an upward departure, which is an additional sentencing because of these components. And for second degree unintentional murder alone in the state of Minnesota, it's 7 to 10 years in prison.
That's it?
Yeah. I'm sorry, the whole unintentional component of this is unacceptable.
There
was every bit of intention here.
Yeah, oh my God. I agree. You don't also hold a pillow over someone's face.
No, that's
correct.
Mark, you've said this many, many times. That's a very personal way to kill somebody.
Absolutely. It is. Yep. It's a position of authority. It's a position of power that you're exerting over somebody else.
Yep.
This is, and maybe for the better, I hate saying it like this, but maybe for the better, we don't know all the exact situations because this probably was a lot worse than we actually know.
Yep.
And this is horrible. And this is why I'm so happy that you're able to tell your sister's story, because this is a story that hopefully will end up helping somebody.
Yes.
It's just unacceptable. And I was slightly familiar with your sister's case, because when you first reached out to me, I did the quick Google search and stuff like that. And then once you said you were willing to come on, I said at that point, I didn't watch the show. I didn't do any additional research on it because
neither.
I wanted to hear the story from you in an unbiased form. And this is absolutely unbelievable. And I'm just happy that you're able to tell the story and basically advocate for people all over the world, basically.
Yep.
I just can't believe he's going to get out. That threw me for a loop when you said that. This is unacceptable.
Well, it is unacceptable. And it throws me for a loop too. Still. I mean, imagine, I don't know. I don't even want to say that to you.
Is there anything that can be done to keep him in there? Is there any?
I get, apparently, they told me that we'll get updates. They may put him on an ankle bracelet or something.
Oh my honestly, God. But there has to be some sort of petition or something. I mean, my gosh, this is not acceptable.
Well, if there's nothing that we can do for him, hopefully maybe we can do something in honor of your sister that maybe helps change these laws and allows us to be this. He should never see the light of day again. Nope. He should never leave the grounds of that prison alive. It's unacceptable.
No, I don't understand how that, you know, and each state is so different. I mean, some states have capital punishment. Some people, it's so different. But it's just, it re-victimizes us
over and over
again.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that date set in stone, or is there a possibility of release early?
Well, I believe so, you know, they do get time off for good behavior.
That's what I was wondering, because it's not even as much. So, and then it could be early release on parole, or this is not okay, guys. This is not acceptable.
No, I don't. And I don't know, Mark, you know, I was just, you know, I have a cardboard box with every newspaper clipping, all of the materials. I have a booklet of the actual trial, dictation, you know, stuff. And it's gross. The defense painted this picture of not only did he kill her, but then his defense attorney made her look like a person she was not, which it was.
Yeah, it makes me so mad when they do that.
When they do that,
they're trying to make it her fault. Unacceptable.
Yeah. Right. Just that's totally. They blame the victim.
Yep.
Unfair. I mean, truly creating just a fictitious storyline that doesn't even make sense. It's not even who she is. I mean, Jeff had planted some marijuana in her purse. And remember, her purse was found in the car.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
So Kira did not do drugs. She would drink alcohol socially. Her toxicology report.
But even if she did, that's not an acceptable excuse.
No.
Well, right. But what they did was they said, well, Jeff didn't do this. This was a drug deal gone bad. She was probably killed by a drug dealer for pot in her purse.
Okay, wow. Then what explains the blood?
Well,
in his house.
Right. So
there's nothing you can do to explain that.
What are you doing? Like, so, and that's kind of what our prosecuting attorneys were saying. Like, so someone just came in the house, killed somebody, killed Kira, and have all this blood all over the house. And
cleaned your house, moved your bedroom around.
They cleaned it up. They cleaned it up though before you got home. And then, so, I mean, it just is so wild. And
yeah, they cleaned it up. They moved your bedroom around and you didn't question why.
Yeah,
give me a break. This is ridiculous.
I'm still stuck on the it wasn't premeditated thing. That really, really bothers me to the core.
I'm stuck on the fact that he's going to get out.
Oh, my God.
Unacceptable. Who knows? It's just what's in this guy's head. What's been stewing in his head for what are going to be these 26, 27 years?
Has he reached out to anybody?
No.
Has he done interviews with anybody?
Mm-mm.
That's good.
No,
unbelievable.
I still and you know what? I'm gonna get to like some things with his family in a little bit, but so he was sentenced. I do want to share that when the sentencing hearing occurred, I had an opportunity to read an impact statement to Judge Castro. And I'm going to read that here today.
Okay.
Good.
Excellent.
And I haven't pulled this out in a while, so. But I was able to read an impact statement to convey how this tragedy, how Jeff murdering my sister has impacted my life, and ask the judge to hear me and take into consideration my words and put that into his sentencing. Okay? Which is the most important thing I've done in my lifetime. And when I knew I was going to be given this opportunity, I didn't know where to start. I didn't know how to put on paper a way to one very last time protect my sister and get her justice. I didn't know where to begin, but I knew it was going to be the most important thing I'd ever do. And so I'm going to read that. I'm going to read that to you. On October 2nd, 2013, after 17 hours over 2 days, the Ramsey County District Court jury convicted Jeffrey Trevino for the murder of my sister, Kira Steger. The sentencing hearing for Trevino followed several months later. I was given an opportunity to prepare and read aloud a victim impact statement to the honorable judge at the hearing prior to the sentence delivery. I felt agonizing pressure to prepare something so influential to the sentencing. I persisted as I knew it was going to be the very last time I could protect my sister. Although difficult, I knew I had to do it for her. I wasn't going to let her down. I was able to fight for her justice, and I would not fail. I remember feeling as though writing a powerful statement to help Kira was likely the most important thing I'd ever do in my entire life. I never imagined defending the life of someone so wrongfully taken and having that person be my very own sister. My heart was so heavy. As much as I wanted to write, my brain tried so hard to shield me from the indescribable heartache I'd experienced. It wasn't even possible for me to conjure up my feelings until 2 days prior to my delivery in court. When I was ready, I wrote. Literally, I wrote for 2 straight days and nights. In fact, I was still writing in the car on the way to Minnesota for the hearing. I wanted to ensure that the calculated criminal was appropriately tried for what he had done to Kira. I put myself out there in a statement. I wrote about how Kira's murder had impacted my life. I wrote my heart out. I let the love I have for my sister pour out of my soul into my mechanical pencil and onto my floral stationery. Many tears flooded my eyes, often having to blink to clear my tears so I could see my paper again as it waited for me so patiently. While in court, to preface the reading of my statement, I asked the Honorable Judge if I may approach the bench. He agreed. As I took my gentle steps up to the bench, I knew that Kira was holding my hand. I asked the judge if he would please look at this picture of Kira and me while I read my statement. He agreed, and I walked back to my post. I grabbed both sides of the podium and I began to speak with conviction. The sound of my own voice startled me. It was a tone I had never heard before. I kept reading. I read my statement from beginning to end. I was strong. I delivered a message my sister deserved. I was proud of myself. I knew wholeheartedly that I had helped her. I felt that I had, in a sense, saved her from the very evil lurking among us in the courtroom. I'm still so sad to have lost Kira so tragically and unfairly. She was such a beautiful, wonderful woman. I miss her every single day. She is still alive in my soul, and I can still hear the sound of her laughter. I hope I never lose that. Each year on October 2nd, I'm thankful that the monster is found guilty and is in prison where he belongs. In honor of my sister and many others, I'm an advocate for domestic violence awareness. I will continue to support the cause for as long as I have this gift of life. And now I'm going to read to you the actual statement. Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Carrie Ann. Kira Steger was my sister. Kira and I were 14 months close in age. We shared a special bond, similar to that of twins. We were very intuitive to each other. Kira and I shared only 348 months and 29 days together before Jeffrey Trevino took her life. I went into work the morning of February 24th, 2013. My day was supposed to consist of office work and looking forward to getting home to seeing my kids. Until I received a text message saying, "I heard about your sister." Not understanding what that meant, I went searching for answers. I then logged on to Facebook to find a missing persons report of Kira. In a clinic full of patients, I yelled, "Oh my God!" I just stared at the missing persons report in disbelief. Panic set in and my fingers shook, barely able to dial the numbers to call my mother. When I reached her, she confirmed that Kira was missing. Jeffrey Trevino had called that morning and told her that Kira had been missing for 3 days. I immediately was struck with confusion, trying to make sense of what was going on in the midst of my shock. I tried to grasp onto any bit of information that could help. Hopeless, desperate, I called Jeffrey Trevino. He was of no help. His coldness and immediate turn to reasoning that Kira had left on her own, that she had disappeared due to a midlife crisis, made me nearly speechless and confused. I thought, that did not sound like my Kira and was not my Kira. He acted as though it was her fault. She was to blame for her disappearance. Such disgusting accusations, and I felt he was lying. I will never forget, as I struggled to breathe, how little emotion he had. Then I caught that monster speaking about my sister in the past tense, and my panic intensified. He became explicit and upset and tried to correct what he had said. I was in utter despair. Wherever she was, I knew it was bad, and I was very afraid. I felt helpless. I reached for more to do, anything I could do to help her. The very next day, the morning of February 25th, 2013, I met my parents and we traveled to Minnesota. Godspeed. Prior to our leaving, we found out Kira's car was found in the Mall of America parking lot and there was blood in the trunk of the vehicle. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't accept it. I was sick to my stomach and I couldn't make clear of my thoughts. I was terrified for her. These minutes of travel felt like an eternity, imagining what I would see. My mind raced, and I thought, if that were her car, if my beautiful sister Kira's blood was in that car, my worst fears had come true. She was gone. This trip of travesty was the first of many I would have to endure. I relived these feelings over and over again as I received additional information. I spent many hellish car rides over and over again to Minnesota, each time knowing more information regarding her disappearance. My family and I were requested to meet with homicide detectives. I was numb. I wasn't ready for what I was about to hear, even though my intuition had already broken me. My family was told that my sister Kira would not be found alive based on the details of their investigation. My family and I wept with extreme sadness. I could only imagine all of the possibilities of horror that she had gone through, and that she was gone forever. The relay of loss was just the beginning of her nightmare. It became my family's main objective to find Kira and bring her home to us to rest in peace. We searched day and night, every moment, wondering what kind of condition we would find her in. I remember one particular day when we were searching at Keller Lake, and I found myself speaking. I found myself speaking out loud to her while we were hiking through the snow in the woods. Hoping I would get some direction, I whispered, "Kira, where are you?" I looked at every branch and every print in the snow. We searched for weeks. After the first search, I began having vivid nightmares, one of which that her body was shoved in a tree trunk. Thereafter, every tree I saw that was tipped over, every log I thought her fragile body might be able to fit in, I crawled on my hands and knees in the snow looking for her, all the while hoping she would talk to me. I was so focused on trying to find her that it didn't sink in. I was looking for my sister's dead body. Looking back, I wonder, what if it had been me that would have found her? I wasn't prepared for that, but I had to look for her. There were many weekends spent axing at the ice, moments in time that I will never get back. I have lost so much joy from these experiences. All the while this was consuming my life, I had a life that was feeling the devastation of it all at home. I tried copious ways to handle a newfound terror that drove my existence. As soon as Kira went missing, I was unable to function and maintain the normalcy of my life. I had my friends checking up on me regularly, worried about me. I felt like a walking coma just trying to stay alive. I couldn't remember day to day what had happened just moments before. I was so traumatized. I found myself struggling. It paralyzed me. Possibly the worst effect was a strain on my ability to be the mother that I was used to being for my two beautiful children. They couldn't understand why I was away from home for so long. My children understand that Kira was hurt, and they cry for her often. They are children, so they are limited to understanding. They are confused like we all are, but more so. They will have the burden of this tragedy on them for the rest of their lives. Infectiously affecting their development as their minds are being molded. I fear the day they are old enough to discover what really happened to their beloved Aunt Kira. I fear the day they are old enough to not only realize how terrible people in this world can be, but that one of those disgusting people took their Aunt Kira from them. Not only will they suffer from this, but our entire family will miss having Kira in our lives for so many important moments. It's still unreal that Kira won't get to see her niece and nephew graduate at kindergarten, let alone watching them receive their high school diplomas. I have to think that not only will Kira miss out on her niece and nephew's milestones, but Kira will also never get to have her own kids. She will not be able to use those motherly instincts and skills to have her own babies and watch them reach their own milestones. I would have so enjoyed sharing experiences of being a mother with her. I never imagined I would be growing older without her. And the Christmases and birthdays will pass. Instead of her beautiful smile lighting up the celebration, there will be a hole where she should be. A hole that will be constant and painful for the rest of my life. Jeffrey Trevino had months to confess that he murdered Kira. As the trial was delayed not once, but twice, Jeffrey Trevino had months to tell the truth, and he intentionally did not. He made my family suffer as we tried so desperately to find Kira and anxiously awaited the trial. We were consistently disappointed by his selfishness and neglect. If Jeffrey Trevino is the honorable military vet the defense says he is, then why has he displayed such dishonesty and disrespect to his wife and his wife's family? This murder was not a crime of passion. Jeffrey Trevino is military trained. He has been trained to have behavioral control as well as control of emotion and rage. This monster is a calculated criminal. He used his training as a weapon to commit and conceal the murder of my sister. Your Honor, Jeffrey Trevino intentionally murdered my sister. He deserves no mercy. He is a monster that robbed my sister of her life, her freedom, her dreams, her family, her happiness. With consideration of these factors, give Jeffrey Trevino the maximum sentencing of 30 years, 360 months. I only had the luxury of spending 348 months and 29 days with my sister Kira alive and well. For the safety of our family and others, put Jeffrey Trevino in prison where he belongs with maximum sentencing. Thank you.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, that right there is a statement from a brave woman.
Yep.
Carrie Ann, you did your sister justice.
And then some.
You are brave. That is what bravery looks like.
Yep. Absolutely.
Unacceptable that it was only that you had to beg to even get that much time to get a maximum sentence of
just 30 years.
Just that. It's unacceptable. I have questions for you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to mention that the 27 and a half years that he ended up getting.
That's right. He didn't even get the 30.
No.
Did he get time served? Is that why?
Yeah.
Ugh, I hate when they do that.
So with that sentencing and that upward departure, as I had mentioned before, that's unprecedented in the state of Minnesota. Kira's case was a big case. And I am just, I mean, it's very strange to say I'm grateful that he got that, because I think he does deserve much more.
But what you're saying. I do.
He could have gotten much less.
He could have gotten 7 to 10 years.
I couldn't imagine that.
That would have been even more disgusting than the 30 years.
The aggravating factors were, you know, causing pain and anguish to family. And I'm paraphrasing, you know, hiding a body. And the other one was something along the lines of like deterring police or something like that.
Well, yeah. And what about withholding truths? You can't.
Yeah. Let's not forget the fact that he took the life of a beautiful individual.
Yep.
That should be number one here.
And forced to drag her name through the mud with fake allegations.
That's the worst. The problem that I have that we haven't touched on yet. And it's something that's been in my head and it makes me wonder. Because, so my girlfriend, we're not even married and I absolutely love her family. And they love me.
Mm-hmm. And my family loves her family and my family loves her.
Right.
What I don't understand is, where was his family in all of this? Where were they? Yes. What were they doing? What were they doing to help?
That's
like,
right.
I'm so confused on that aspect, because if my girlfriend went missing, my family would be going crazy trying to find her.
Right. They would be asking all the questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. So that's one of my big questions for you, Carrie Ann. What happened here?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I don't recall the Trevino family ever coming up doing any searching for Kira.
Wow.
That could be outside of, you know, my knowledge, but I had gone to a good number of searches and I don't recall that. They loved Kira so much. Jeff's family was so good to Kira. They loved her so much. It is not even, I don't even have that in question at all. I think the loss of Kira was devastating for them too. I mean, you know, what attracted me to your post about Gabby and Brian, the Petito, you know, case was, I had mentioned, my comment was something like, yeah, these families have lost a son and a daughter. You know, they have both lost someone. Yeah. And this was,
I think that's something that goes unnoticed to some people, that they're both families suffer and it's horrible.
Right. And, you know, regardless of, you know, what ended up happening with Brian, or if he was, you know, would have been caught and gone to prison, that is still a loss. Going to prison is still a loss of a child. And I really feel for their family. I believe they, to the last of my knowledge, they believe of his innocence, which is surprising to me, based on all of the evidence in the case and charges, etc.
They think that they believe the story of drug deal going bad, and that blood in the house wasn't from her.
You know, and I don't
think it's wishful.
I agree. I think it's more
wishful ignorance, blissful ignorance. I think it's called. Like, I don't know the exact word.
Pulling yourself away from it because you can't possibly believe that your child could have done something like this. Yeah.
Yeah, but the evidence should speak differently.
Right. And, you know, so there's the evidence, right? And I could see where, I mean, I don't even, I guess I can't even say that. I'm not them. I don't know what they're thinking and feeling. Right. I don't think they want to believe that their son would do something like that. But I genuinely know with 100% certainty that they loved Kira, and that the loss of Kira is absolutely devastating to them. And they've lost a son that's now in prison.
Yeah. I'm sure.
I mean, I do feel for them. I you know, I find it frustrating. You know, I don't recall them. They did come up for the trial.
Yeah, but that I have mixed emotions on. Were they coming up to support their son, or were they coming up to be there for the right reasons?
Let me ask you this. Do you think possibly they were advised by his lawyer to not talk to any of you and not?
I believe that. I don't even think you have to ask that. I think that is definite closing of the ranks. Absolutely.
That could be a situation that happened, and they wanted to, but were told that they couldn't because they did believe their son was innocent. I don't know. I mean.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, if I'm in that situation, no one's going to tell me I can't do something to find somebody I love and care about.
Right.
That's just not going to happen. Yep. I don't really care.
Yep.
It's unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean. That could be. They could have been given that advice. I just am not, obviously, I'm not privy to that.
Right.
But
have you had any communication with them since?
No. Because of my, you know, my last knowing, I mean, I'm pretty, you know, secluded. I've intentionally, you know, done that for really my own safety.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that.
And privacy. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, grief is a really hard thing. People deal with it very differently. I am not them. I'm sure this has really uprooted and changed their lives as well on many levels too. my message, really would, it's just really hard. This is just, it's a terrible tragedy. I appreciate the way they've shown my sister, their family, has shown my sister so much love, and she loved them. And I'm sure this is really hard for them.
This makes it hard. Absolutely.
Looking back now, after all this is said and done, did you think you saw some warning signs maybe that you didn't know were warning signs?
I think the most observant, sign that I noticed was just her, coming home less frequently.
I see. You probably just thought she was really busy with her life and her husband. And I mean,
well, and I just had my second child in 2008. So when they got married, I couldn't go to the wedding because it was in Costa Rica, and I was pregnant at the time. And so I actually couldn't make it. But yep. I don't know. She just didn't come home as much. Yeah. When she would come home though, she'd have sleepovers. She was so fun. She'd wear she came over one time and she had this onesie Cat in the Hat.
Oh, cute.
Full adult, sleeper jammy on. And we had a sleepover with my two little kids, and that's Aunt Kira. She is just has the most beautiful soul. When I say that, I would have loved to been, have an experience of being a mother with her. I mean that, but
you were robbed of that. That's the worst part.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just so many of those little things that, you think, oh, I wonder, or I'd love to share this with her. I'd love to be in this moment with her. I wish she was here for this.
Well, I believe she knows, and I believe she sees this and sees the fight that you've put up for her.
Earlier you had mentioned, I'm sure that there are people that have gotten out of, situations because of her story. And that's true. In fact, most recently on the anniversary of her death on February 21st, Minnesota United is a group that was created on Facebook, originally started when Kira, Mandy Matula and Danielle Jelinek were all missing at the same time. And they were all in the same area. And so it was kind of the community, the public was wondering if it was possibly some sort of serial thing related.
Yeah,
that's,
it's just very strange. But it turns out that all three of them were, it was an intimate violence, domestic violence. Yeah, they all.
So sad.
So sad. So, Minnesota United was created in their memory, and now the group continues to live on social media by sharing missing persons reports and updates, and it's just absolutely phenomenal the work that has advanced in this effort since we the founding reason why it started was because of these girls. It's just grown so significantly and has helped so many people. But
wow.
On February 21st, last month, when Minnesota United made a post about remembering Kira, a woman had wrote on a comment. It said, her story and of the others is what helped me get away from my abuser.
Wow.
I drew strength from them and planned my escape. So thank you for sharing their stories. Because of them, I survived.
Wow, that is amazing.
That's powerful.
That is so powerful. It just goes to show that in tragedy, there can be some light that comes out of it.
I know as we get ready to wrap this episode up, there's a lot of stuff that numbers that we give you
websites to visit, any of that. The only one of significance that I can even think of mentioning today is the National Domestic Violence Hotline. It's 1-800-799-7233. 1-800-799-7233. You can also send a text stating START to 88788. Guys, there's nothing more that we can really say on this. If you see something, say something. If you see somebody who's suffering, reach out to them. They may be embarrassed and not want to talk about it, but just let them know that you're there. Just be careful how you approach things, because you don't know if they're being monitored or how they're being monitored, and you just don't understand and you don't know. Carrie Ann, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and telling us the story of your wonderful and amazing sister. Like, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. I like I said, from the bottom of me and Charity's heart, we thank you for coming on and sharing this case. And if it just reaches one person, that's it. Just one person. I feel like we've done something. Thank you so much for coming on today.
And I also want to say thank you for sharing your personal account of it, because a lot of times you hear the story of the victim. You don't hear the story of the family members. And that's so important.
And I know how hard it was for you.
And my gosh, I mean, to say that and I know Mark feels the same way, because I was looking at him. We are so touched by this, and I will never forget, Kara. I promise you never. And we so appreciate you sharing this story.
Thank you so much for saying that. It's important for me to be here. I want to thank you for giving me this time and for letting me speak. Thank you. And please, yes, thank you for saying that you're not going to forget Kira Charity.
Never.
Absolutely.
That touched my soul so much. And I do this for her and for everyone else. Like, speak up and say something. Reach out. There are so many resources. There's local resources. There's state resources. There's federal resources. And please speak up, because we must break the cycle of domestic violence.
This is a great start. Guys, thank you for joining us today. Carrie Ann, thank you for coming on and sharing the story. And we'll see you on the next episode. Have a good one, guys.
Endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.